Hey friend, really proud of this Portfolio Career podcast with Dara Brustein. Dara is a lifestyle designer, entrepreneur, and writer. Her work has been featured in Forbes. Please see dara.co for many great resources and programs of hers. There, you will find information and resources related to a virtual summit that Dara solely produced and curated called Living a Life by Design, Not by Default, that featured 45 top leaders. You can also see her weekly video series with Deepak Chopra on YouTube and Instagram. It is called Diving Deep with Deepak and Dara. On this episode, we cover a lot of key topics like taking chances on big potential opportunities, stories not always told, co-mentoring, and really helpful ways to have your friends truly help you succeed. I can't wait for you to build and grow your portfolio career here. So here we go with Dara. Cool. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Dara Brustein. How's it going, Dara?
Going well. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm in New York and you're in Atlanta, but if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
It's actually the thing I struggle a lot with. I hate introducing myself. My least favorite question on the planet is, what do you do? Because I instantly feel like I'm being sized up and that someone wants to transact with me and they want to know if I'm good enough to talk to them. And as someone with a quote unquote portfolio career, it's tough to know which thing to answer. So frankly, it depends on the context. Sometimes I'll answer based on, you know, who I know they are and what might be most appealing. Other times I'll kind of give them a flyer and just be like, I'm a writer. Other times I'll say I'm an entrepreneur and a writer. Other times I'll be super specific. Other times I'll just be like, whatever it takes, like whatever it takes. I honestly, it just depends on my mood and the environment.
Well, thankfully you've written a great article with 55 icebreakers. So I will, I'll link that in the notes here for some people to come up with better questions than I just had right now.
It's real though. It's such a common and classic way to get to know someone, and it's my least favorite for all the reasons I've just stated. And I go into that more in the article as well. And I think people just need to know that they have something else in their back pocket to ask, because it's just a knee-jerk reaction and it's acculturated, as opposed to it could be anything else, but it's easy. So we go with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're a friend of me and willing to be on the podcast. And one thing that I thought maybe we could start off with was, I loved your recent post on Facebook about your 10-year anniversary and made it a lot easy to prep for this interview. So I appreciate that. But I would love to just learn a little bit more about the 10-year anniversary and kind of what sparked that post.
So for anyone who's not Facebook friends with me, I recently celebrated the 10-year anniversary of my first company. So it was the 10-year anniversary of working for myself. And one of the things that I'm really committed to doing in all arenas, especially on social media, is not allowing it to be a place that's only the highlight reel. But in addition to what seems cool and fanciful, like you and I were talking about offline, all the travels that I do, being real with people and letting them know that yes, and so yes, there's this great thing that's happening. And yes, my company grew into 38 states and I started other companies and here's all these milestones and this is so cool. Also, you know, I lost 3 jobs along the way. I feared foreclosure. I had a landlord I had a restraining order against, which drove me to buy a house when I was 23 at a, you know, super early age that I wasn't anticipating. I lost big clients. I got laid off from 3 jobs. I failed at a lot of things. Like I auditioned for The Apprentice and I auditioned for this Oprah show at one point, and none of those things happened. I worked to audition for Shark Tank. Didn't get that. And I, you know, I didn't say every single one of those details in there, but I did say a lot of them. And simply, it just came down to, behind anything that looks great or perhaps unachievable to someone else, there is challenge and struggle. And I wanted to be real about that. And I also wanted to express to people that people often say to me, like, oh my gosh, how do you live this life that you do? And I'm so jealous. And I don't want to invoke and incite jealousy. I want to invoke and incite inspiration and let people know that not only am I doing it, but I'm no different than you are, and you can certainly do it for yourself too. And I want to let them know that if you're willing to go through some of the challenges, then great. This is, that's what it takes to get here.
Okay, perfect. And we'll go into that a little bit more, but it sounds like what you're hinting at here is, I think, a post that I really connected with you about, of like kind of jumping in the ring and, you know, kind of, you know, as you mentioned, applying to all these different places and auditioning. Can you maybe speak to, kind of on a portfolio career project level, of what are some great examples to just jump in besides the ones you just mentioned?
Yeah, the one that you're talking about was this concept that I believe in, that you have to throw your hat in the ring, because if you don't, you've automatically failed and you've taken yourself out of contention in the first place. And people are so quick to discount themselves and make up a million and one excuses as to why it's not for them, or they're not qualified, or, you know, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not thin enough, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough resources, someone else is already doing it better, like whatever those things are. It's so quick for us to tell ourselves these stories and discount ourselves. So it's important that I explain to people, like, there's a million people who run a credit card processing company, which is my first business. And I also found a niche and was able to carve my way into the industry and have success. Or with networking events, I started a networking events company about 8 years ago. There's a million networking events, but there wasn't one doing what I was doing with the values and the vibe that I wanted to create. So we carved out our own niche. And I think anytime, much like Ryan Holiday's book is called The Obstacle is the Way, anytime you see an obstacle, think about another way. Think about what you can learn from that. Think about a creative way to approach it. Look for examples of people who have done it before you. Stop letting the excuses be your end and instead throw your hat in the ring.
Fascinating. Okay. And you're working on a couple really exciting projects. So very inspired by the way you've just been jumping in and bolting onto your portfolio career and debunking the status quo, which I'd love to get into a little bit more. But one thing that I would love to learn more about is this concept that you talk about, of utilizing your network to fund and fuel your growth. And I think sometimes people are a little bit hesitant to ask their friends for advice or for opportunities. Maybe could you speak to that a little bit more and help people see a way forward?
Absolutely. So I want to clarify that, number one, I think the people you know, your network, your community, your relationships, is the number one asset in life. And what I mean by that is, not only is there studies that have been done that give evidence and data to the fact that we are happiest and healthiest when we are in community, but secondarily, people are the ways to achieve and access the opportunities that you're seeking. So there is a holistic reasoning why you want to be in relationships and have a network. So given that, I think it's critical to understand that in relationships and in networks, it's not about what you can get, it's about what you can give. So that is number one. However, I'm going to also explain that the people around you are, like I said, the people who are going to open the doors that you need to the opportunities that you're seeking. So it's important that you recognize that if you have goals and dreams and visions, that it's important that you're around people who are going to help elevate you to dream bigger, to do bigger, to think bigger, and also can open the right doors, whether it's directly or through their series and chain of connections. And often we look at networks as one of two things. It's either, what can I get right now? It's really transactional. And that's this old school, awful way of looking at networking. Or it's like, well, they're just my friends. And you alluded to this, that people are so weary to ask for help. I look at all of my network as just different levels of closeness of friends. And it's very old school thinking of, you have to know, like, and trust people. We've learned this from Carnegie. You have to know, like, and trust people to do business. And the knowing and the liking and the trusting are all the same as friendship. So if we take away some of this traditional professional mire over it and just look at it as, how do I just hang out and connect with people that I actually enjoy being around and who I want to help further in their lives and careers? There's a reciprocity reflex that everyone has, and you don't do it to manipulate that, but you do understand that, I call this karmic retribution of giving, that I give to you, David, and you give to someone else, and they give to someone else. And eventually I know it'll come back to me somewhere, somehow, and I don't have to stress about it. So that being said, I think the more one can just go out into the world and build real value additive relationships where they truly enjoy connecting with them, and share with them what your intentions and hopes and goals are, the more quickly things are going to happen for you, because those people truly and genuinely want to see you succeed as you do they.
Okay. And so maybe diving into that a little bit more, another post of yours recently, an article, I think, is about 9 questions to ask your network. Maybe can we go through maybe one or two of them to help unblock people from limiting beliefs?
Yeah, so I wrote an article that you're referring to called something like the 9 questions to ask your network to help you find your path. And I think it's really critical because you can't see your own spot, meaning it's easy for someone on the outside to see stuff about you that sometimes is challenging for us to recognize in ourselves or we might take for granted in the first place. So questions on there are things like, what would you call me for when the chips are down? At what do you think I am the best at? Where do you see me when I'm my weakest? Like, what causes that? What's something you know about me that you don't think I know about myself? Things along these lines, and they're all in the article if you want to share that as well. But the way that I structured this, and I really recommend people consider doing it, is you do it in person or over email with people in your network, typically 10 or so folks who know you in different arenas of your life, but know you closely enough to answer these types of questions. And the important part is that you make it clear that they cannot ask for it in return. There is no reciprocity here. And the reason is you don't want someone answering the questions with the fear or the voice in the back of their mind saying, well, what's Dara going to say about me if I say this? You want them to feel very available to be 100% transparent with you and that your only response can be thank you. And then it's your responsibility to take the responses and then sift through them and see if there's patterns. Because there's always outliers, but see what stands out and then try that on and think, you know, maybe this is something that I can do to help guide me in my future.
That's really interesting about the lack of reciprocity with that approach. I didn't think about that as much.
Yeah, I think it's really important because naturally it's like when you do a Lyft or an Uber rating that at least there's the blindness to it. So if I give you a 3 stars, you're not going to think, well, screw them. They gave me 3 stars. I'm going to give them a lower rating as well. And since this isn't blind and you know these people and you're going to know who the answers came from, I really think it's important that you tell them, I won't be able to do this in return because I need you to be as sincere and authentic and genuine as possible.
Love that. Okay. Maybe you'll get an email in a little while, Dara.
I didn't know. I was like, don't do it to me. But I'd be happy to do it for people who I know. But the thing is, you really have to know people deeply to be able to offer something of value in these responses.
Okay. And then clearly with portfolio career, I think, you know, as I mentioned, you've been a big advocate, thought leader, practitioner of this movement, this lifestyle. And so I'd love to learn a little bit more about, and if people are listening and they're, you know, maybe working a 9-to-5 or maybe have a side hustle, how can they start to design a life that is, you know, traveling maybe as much as you do or has the type of impact that they'd like to have? Like, what are some tangible mini steps to kind of build on to have a more robust portfolio career?
The first step, in my opinion, is to understand your intention. So it's knowing your why, and it's slowing down enough to really assess and analyze where you are now and what's in alignment with your values and your goals and dreams going forward. And then to really stop and assess what's the big dream and what is it in all different arenas of my life? And if those all integrated together like they do in life, because they don't live in little buckets and silos like we often like to think that they do, what would that actually look like and feel like to embody and enact it? And to do that, an exercise that I've enjoyed and have done many different times is just take a notebook with me for 30 days. Or write in an Evernote if that's easier. And anytime I think of something that I loved doing as a child, that people gravitate towards me to because they think that I'm talented at it, that are things that give me energy, that there are things that make me jealous in other people because that's a cue that I want it for myself, but perhaps haven't admitted it yet. Things like that I will write down. And then after my brainstorm period is done, then I'll assess it and I'll look at it and think, what are different ways I could piece these things together? Where am I not seeing enough of this or that in my life? Is that a hobby? Is that a business? Is that, you know, where can these things fit in? And it's completely non-judged and it's completely often absurd because certain things that I'll piece together, I'm like, I've never heard of that before. I've never seen that before. But what if I just tried? And a lot of it too is really kind of taking almost a lean startup methodology to this brainstorm of I don't have to hold so tightly to any of these options or potential outcomes. that I could try something and I don't have to fully put my flag in the ground and say, this is what I am and this is what I'm doing, but I can try and I can iterate and I can pivot. And you can take some of that language that's become so popularized in startup culture around failing and pivoting and iterating and apply it to your life and your career and not hold it so dearly and think, I have to pick this one thing and everyone's going to be paying attention. And if I don't do it right or well, then I'm going to be a massive failure. Because if there's anything I've learned, it's that most people aren't paying that much attention. And even if they are, it's very fleeting because then they're getting back to whatever they were doing. So what often holds us back from doing this dreaming in the first place or trying new things is the fear of what other people are going to think. And when you recognize that they don't care that much, and when they do, typically they just want what's in your best interest. So if you really are doing this in your best interest to explore and expand, then that's motivating to them and inspiring to them, and they're going to support it. So if you can move beyond that fear, it's a lot easier to move into some of these steps.
Okay. That's interesting about people that always often forget about many little projects or experiments that you're running. So just to just do them because people aren't going to remember them and take the chance, maybe it really works out.
I mean, I would challenge the listeners to even think about stuff that you've done in your own past that you forget. Like, I'm sitting here and being like, gosh, I forgot that I tried to like sell jewelry on the side in my 20s to make a side income. Like that just popped back in my head. Or there is like my friend and I wanted to open a sex toy shop that was super inspiring to women and helped them embrace their sexuality when we were 23. And then we're like, oh, we don't want to own a retail store after we had done like oodles of research and looked at physical locations and all this other stuff. I would venture to guess that 99% of the people that know me forget that I even tried to do that. I forget that I tried to do that. So give yourself a break and cut yourself some slack and try.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a lot of interesting projects there.
Very various.
Yeah. And another thing. One thing that the summit that you created, the virtual Live by Design Summit, what was the motivation behind that? Like, what did you see that, you know, really you wanted to throw yourself into the ring on that?
There were several motivating factors. One, the real primary catalyst was that I decided in November of last year that I wanted to write another book, my first book being on financial literacy for kids. This new book was going to be about how to intentionally design your life, build a business or a career to fund it and a network to support it. And I realized having done the children's book about 5 or 6 years ago, how much goes into marketing a book. And I wanted to start working on that on the front end. So I thought, well, I've had careers and businesses in a lot of other fields, but never in that space. How do I begin to get to know an audience and for them to get to know me? And so I had heard about virtual summits. I had never attended one. I had certainly never put one on. And I had done some rudimentary research and thought, okay, this looks like it's about a 3-month project and it takes X, Y, and Z. And, you know, little did I know that was completely inaccurate. It took a lot more time and effort and money than I thought. But, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And that was actually advantageous because if I did know everything that it took to put it on at the scale that I did, I probably would have felt overwhelmed and wouldn't have done it. So I'm glad that I didn't know that. But that being said, it was really important to me, additionally to what I just shared, to create a space and an opportunity for people to have the tools and the resources that I had been gathering for the past decade to intentionally design my life and career and give them access to that content. And so I tapped 45 of some of the world's greatest thought leaders in all of these spaces, everyone from Deepak Chopra to Adam Grant, Jen Sincero, who wrote the Aura Badass series, to Ronnie Turioff, who's a 2-time NBA champion and Olympian, and all these other incredible humans to come together and teach at this summit. And I thought, you know, I've been really privileged to grow a network that allows me to interact with all of these folks, but not everyone has that. So why don't I help shortcut other people's testing and let them just piggyback off of my mistakes and all of my learnings and put it in a place for them? And so that was really one of the strong motivators and why I'm moving into the book anyway, because I think people need to be given these tools and resources and shouldn't have to search far and wide for them, nor should they have to spend 10 years or 20 years or 30 years learning them by their own ups and downs. Like certainly they're going to have to experience them and try them on for themselves. But I thought, hey, if I can make it quicker and easier for someone else, then why don't I?
Okay. And then the book is coming out. And
TBD. I mean, publishing is a long, long process. So I would venture to guess 2 more years.
Cool. Excited to check that out.
Thank you.
And then correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't after that summit, didn't a new business opportunity just kind of all of a sudden pop up for you?
Yeah, several actually. So during the time that that summit was going on, I was growing my social media presence to, again, be in favor of getting to know an audience, them getting to know me, and wanting to add value additive content out into the world and not just make these spaces ones, again, where people are just celebrating all their successes, but that there's real value add. So as I was growing my Instagram, I got a call from Chase Bank and they said, we'd love for you to be an influencer for us and we'd love you to be an on-site correspondent at a couple of our conferences. So I got to go to Inc. 5000 for them and interview folks, and I got to interview their headliners like Cam Newton and again, Deepak at their Atlanta conference. And it was really cool because it was this side thing that suddenly became this awakening for me of, oh, wow, I really love doing this. And I had never even considered that as an opportunity. So I just stayed open and said yes when it presented itself. And then secondarily, as a result of the summit and becoming friendly with Deepak Chopra through it, we connected several times throughout the course of 2018. And then right at the end of the year, he said to me, why don't we connect? And I want you to help me make my thoughts and lessons more understandable and translatable to people. And we started a weekly video series together that we launched in January of this year. And that was something that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have said yes to the summit and said yes to Deepak. Actually was the first person I ever interviewed, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, is daunting. And he opened this whole portal for me because he said yes and I said yes. So that's pretty cool.
Wow. Take the next step and you never know what will happen.
Yeah, I just think if you say yes to stuff that feels exciting, there is no harm that can come from it. And actually, Deepak has given me a cool framework that he uses for how he knows when to say yes or no. And for him, he said it's three simple things. If the person he's doing the activity with is fun to be with, if the activity itself is fun, and if the thing they're doing is of service to the world, then he says yes. And it has to be all three. So it's super simple.
Okay. Love that. Those three. I haven't heard them like that. And I'll think about that for the next project.
Perfect.
Okay. One other topic that I haven't heard as much that I really enjoyed through some of your work was this concept around co-mentoring. Maybe could you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, first, good job on your research. Second, so I think that mentoring is really important, but that the way that it's traditionally structured is outdated. And we are often led to believe that mentorship is this really disweighted relationship where one person is in this deeply giving space and it's this long-term drawn-out relationship and the other person is constantly seeking and taking from the other. And that in order to have that, either someone has to almost back someone in a corner and be like, hey, I just met you and I admire you. Will you be my mentor? And that person feels really awkward. Or the mentor position has to see something in you that often they saw in themselves as a younger person and they want to help you along the way. And I think those can still work. But typically, I think there's better ways to do it these days. One is that there's co-mentorship, like you talked about, where you can find people in your lives who are your peers that have complementary skill sets that you each want to learn from. So the example I share in the article is this woman, Talia, who's a friend of mine, where she is an expert in social media and copywriting. And according to her, I was an expert in scaling businesses. So we both wanted to learn that skill from one another at that given time. So we said, why don't we just mentor each other? And so we dedicated certain amounts of time and we decided we were gonna not make it ritualistic or super regimented, but that we'd hop on a call from time to time when we needed it. And we would give each other permission to reach out when something came up. And we would ask the questions and we would help each other and we would guide each other and we would open the door to resources. And it was super fruitful. And then, you know, a time naturally comes where you each learned what you needed and you move on and you remain friends. And it was great. And the other piece of mentorship that I think is important is to understand that mentorship can happen both in small moments where, you know, you and I can sit down and have a conversation and I can learn from you and or you could learn from me. And that's a mentoring moment. And that you can be mentored by people who don't even know you, meaning you can listen to their podcasts like yours. You can read their articles like mine. You can read their books. You can watch them on a show. There's ways that people put material out in the world where they can be mentoring and guiding you without having a personal relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. That's totally different than, you know, I remember growing up and out of school and stuff. And yeah, it's really helpful. Thank you. Any other, you know, projects or interests or anything else in this moment and, you know, as a leader in the portfolio career movement, that I've been looking forward to this conversation for so long. Anything else you'd like to debunk here and or talk about?
I mean, it's interesting. I've never actually used the phrase portfolio career, but it's fascinating to me because I've just been the type of person who follows my instincts. And if I have energetic and time capacity to pour into something that I believe will be in true utilization of my unique gifts and skills and matches a need of other people, then I'm all about it. And that's how all of my businesses have started. And I think that what that has taken for me to do that is to, going back to the first question you asked me, is to release a lot of the fear of public scrutiny around that, that so many people want me and want people to be just one thing because it's easier to contextualize and categorize. And I understand that and I respect that. It's just not how I want to live my life. And so, you know, on a broader scheme, when we're talking about this life by design, not by default work that I've been doing a lot of, it just really boils down to what truly makes you happy, what truly lights you up, what truly is in alignment with your gifts, and making sure that you are intentionally chasing after those things, not what you have been socialized to believe is what you should be doing. And that just takes a gut check and a self check to say, is my job, is my career, is my relationship, is the way I spend my time, is the way I spend my money, am I doing that because other people are expecting it of me, or am I doing it because I actually want that for myself? And I think that's really critical when we're thinking about anything, especially our careers, because we spend so much of our time doing them. So that's one. The other piece that I'd say too is I'm a really big believer in reverse engineering your career, specifically your business, if you're an entrepreneur, to work in favor of the life that you want. And what I mean by that is, if you've done an exercise like I talked about earlier, where you're really figuring out envisioning what you're looking for, then assign dollar values to it and figure out what do all of these things that I want to do practically cost, and then figure that out on an annual basis and then a monthly basis. And so let's say that number, just for a round number's sake, is $10,000 a month. What does it take for you to earn that across your portfolio career? Where do you have to make what to get to that point? And in spending the time to do that, are you then subsuming the life that you actually want to live, or is it in support of it? And how do you make sure the life you want doesn't just fit into the nooks and crannies that are left after your career, but is really driving and dictating the career in the first place?
The numbers, I love that.
It's practical and it's real. Like for me, with the credit card processing company as my first business, I was able to get it down to the fact that I knew that an average client was worth $40 a month. So I knew how many clients do I have to get, because mine was a residual one, to get to a point where I was making, let's say, $10,000 a month again, and I could back into it and figure that out. And I knew exactly what it took to get there, to get to my version of financial freedom, which allowed me to then have the time and choice freedom to do whatever I chose. And then I could decide how much more do I want to build this or other things or whatever else.
Love that. Okay, perfect. Well, Dara, this has been a true joy. And I know people are going to want to follow up and support many of your efforts. You mentioned a couple of them already. What would be the best way for people to follow along and support?
Thank you. The best way is I am very consistent on Instagram, as you talked about. Every day I post something that I hope is of value to those who are paying attention. So that's at Dara B, DarraAhB. And then I have a lot of free stuff on my website, including all the articles that you talked about and some free guides and such, as well as the Life by Design Summit, lifetime access if anyone wants that, which that one is not free, but it's only $97. And that's all at Dara.co.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much, Dara. Really appreciate your time.
Likewise. Thanks, David.